With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the FPL Roundtable, the only fantasy Premier League podcast where we guarantee that you might learn something about fantasy, probably. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. Joining me, as always, is my good friend and partner in crime, Rob Langevin. Now, Rob, usually
Yes. We
have to jump straight into transfers and stuff like that, but there haven't really been too many big ones. So instead, how's life?
Life's good. Good to be on another podcast this week. You know, as we count down and eke towards the start of the season next Friday, I'm excited. You know, I'm on draft probably, 400 and something for my official game team. Just soaking in all the information that we can get from preseason games and what we see and what we don't see. And as expected, Daniel Sturridge goes off with an injury, which is so
After looking like he might actually end up being relevant this season.
Yeah, so typical. I mean, if there's a poster boy for what if, it's got to be Daniel Sturridge.
Yeah, it's been absolutely crazy what he how much time he's spent in the training room, medical room, physio room, doctor's room, waiting room,
all of the above.
Purgatory.
At all? How about at all?
At all of the above. All right, well, as mentioned, there are a few transfers to get through. First one, not actually official yet, but Kelechi Iheanacho pictured having his Leicester medical today. We actually spoke with Jim Knight, who's our Leicester correspondent on the EPL Roundtable, when we were talking about the striker situation. And he said that this isn't really a concern about Vardy. It's really more an indictment of what they didn't get last year from Slimani and Musa. So with that little extra context, are you thinking that Iheanacho could be helpful this year? Or do you think it's more of a in-future kind of signing? Although we do not yet know if City have a buyback.
Yeah, I know that was the big conundrum when when West Ham was sniffing around him. There was an exorbitant buyback fee that was being thrown onto him. I like Iheanacho in Leicester. I think that him and Vardy will pair up nicely. I'm not saying they're gonna gel right away. It's gonna take some time.
Do you think they would be used as a pair though, like 4-4-2?
Yeah,
two of them.
Absolutely. I think they will be. I think that you said it completely best. What they didn't get last year out of Musa and Okazaki and who else is there?
Ochoa.
I mean, he's better than every one of them. He's proven that he could be a goal scorer. Yes, he's a goal scorer for a team that has a dynamic, intrinsic fantasy value like City. But, Leicester does have some interesting fantasy weapons that are going to be surrounding him, through the buildup. You still have, Mahrez. You still have Vardy on one of the opposite sides from him. They have great facilitators through the middle. Drinkwater is an excellent midfielder. I mean, they have tools in the shed to make Iheanacho a fantasy relevant player. I'm not saying that he's gonna walk right in there and just walk around like he's Ric Flair and just drive limousine drive and he's not that guy. But at his price, he's in that. Well, do I go hit this route or do I go a complete flyer route? He's still cheap enough that he doesn't fall into that City trap of really expensive, players.
Yeah.
So you could still get a little bit of a bargain there because he's only 7.0, which is, really, really cheap for a former City player to be transferring somewhere else. I mean, it's only 1.5 more than Kurt Zuma, and he went to Stoke. So, I mean, you're going to be buying in on the fact that, yes, Iheanacho has some previous EPL experience in scoring goals. Yes, people, were intrinsically in love with him, I guess we'll say. Why he was hot? Because he did play for City. Will that transfer over to the Leicester side? it's kind of like a wait and see, but I think he starts there. I think he's better than what we saw them have last year. I mean, they didn't really get any kind of effort from any other forward there. Like you said, Musa didn't do much. Slimani was more of like a seventh inning, eighth inning guy. I know I'm using a baseball reference there, but he was like a reliever. Okazaki, you know, he runs his butt off for them, but you know, he doesn't have that.
He is so helpful in everything that isn't fantasy relevant.
Yeah, he runs his butt off and doesn't get any of the reward. So I mean, yeah, I mean it's 7.0. I mean, yeah, I'm buying Iheanacho. I'm not buying him right away, but you know, there is some value there. I think that people down the line are going to look at him and see how he does and how he develops and how much he plays in those first 2-3 games. And I think when it comes time to wildcard, and depending on how well he's doing, I think he's probably going to be that cheap third striker that people could monopolize on.
Yeah, we're going to get into either ors in a little bit, but him being priced at 7.0 does raise a very interesting and very direct question with one of the more recent signings as well. Would you rather have rest of season? By rest of season, I mean literally all 38 weeks of the season. Would you rather have Iheanacho or Chicharito?
You know, I'm interested to see what Chicharito can do at West Ham. How much he's actually going to play initially is probably the same as Iheanacho. I don't know how much Chicharito is going to be there. I think Chicharito could be that change of pace guy for the first couple games, just to get him into the flow, get him to develop with the guys around him, and have West Ham roll with it like that. Same thing goes for Iheanacho when he does, and if he does go to the Leicester, you know, you're basically in a wait and see kind of proposition. I wouldn't roster either of these guys because neither of them are you know, nodded on as the guy. I know Chicharito's been getting a ton of hype right now, and his ownership is showing it. You know, he's owned in 17% of leagues right now in the official game, which is a huge number. I mean, that's in the top 8 overall for ownership of forwards. I mean, that's not something to sneeze at. So I guess people are buying in.
Like we well, as soon as the price was announced, all of us thought it was going to be 8+.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be 8+ as well, because I think that the previous 59 goals and 157 appearances, he is getting up there in age, by soccer terms, I guess we'll call it.
He was still top 10 in goals in the Bundesliga last year in a down season. He was top 5 the year before that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably have to say neither. I wouldn't be able to choose one right now because I don't think I'd have any of them. You know, you're only allowed 3 strikers. If I was allowed 6 strikers, absolutely, I'd probably have a goal. But, you know, based on the value of some of the other strikers, you know, you look at Benteke at 8.0, I'd rather have Benteke over those two easily for an extra $1 million.
Yeah. Another one involving your club, Nemanja Matic leaves Chelsea again, this time to follow Jose Mourinho to Manchester United. Of course, he's played with him before. What do you think this will do to his fantasy value and the value of the players around him?
You know, I think he could have sneaky good value there. I know he's, 5.0, I believe. I believe he's 5.0. I mean, he did have basically he's walking onto a Manchester United side, and if he was there last year, he would have led all midfielders in assists for them. So that's
didn't
that's
he also
saying,
have like 4 or 5 goals as well?
I think he had 2 or 3 goals. Yeah, he had a couple. So I mean, yeah, it's he does have some value. I think it helps the players around him more, namely Paul Pogba. I think Pogba at 8.0 right now, with the idea that Matic is coming in there. I think Pogba is going to allow him to move up the pitch a bit, and I think it's going to add to his fantasy value. I know there's tons of love right now for Paul Pogba, 21.4% owned at 8.0. You know, that's one of every five teams in the official game, which is basically 550,000 players right now. It's almost 2 million. So so it's crazy that I think that this, the one player that this directly affects is Paul Pogba, because I think that this allows him to move up the pitch and be more of a, you know, one box to the other goal, midfielder, instead of being that box to box guy. I think that he's going to be involved in the play more. I mean, Matic is a great player. You know, I liked him at Chelsea. I think that, you know, he fit nicely there. And I think that, you know, I think this helps, you know, Bakayoko a little bit too. I think that he can, you know, carve out a niche there for the Chelsea side. I don't know if I'd roster him because I don't think he's going to offer much offensively, you know, but if he gives you, you know, 90% of what Matic did, he's going to be a value. I mean, and his price is kind of a little bit pricey, but he's on a top flight team. So you're going to have to pay for that, you know. Yeah. Oh, he's actually says the same price. I was reading the wrong guy. I'm sorry. Mm. Bakayoko is 5.0. So, you know, it just adds to the conundrum of – it always goes back to – I don't think we've mentioned it yet on this podcast. You know, it goes back to Wiener Fabregas again. Yeah. So, I mean –
which is now even more – now more interesting because Hazard is back in light training and could make mm-hmm. week one now, which would ruin a whole lot of Willian and Pedro love for people.
Yeah, it would. And Pedro's got a little, you know, yield sign on,
broke
too.
His face.
Broke his face.
I forgot about that.
He broke his face. that was Italian for anybody at home. That's mm-hmm. That's all that I know. So,
besides you don't know words. Scaramucci.
Scaramucci. Jesus. A divorce, eh? That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they're all – those guys are all Matic, Bakayoko. You know, there's always the conundrum of Willian and Fabregas. I think people are going to go down to the wire with them for seeing what they can, you know, squeeze out of them. I think they're waiting for the community shield to see what happens there to actually iron out what Chelsea will actually do on the pitch.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bakayoko, Matic, they're secondary fantasy options right now until we see more. But at 5.0, there's worse punts out there.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. I'm always surprised by how many of these defensive midfielders end up being owned. But a little more foreshadowing for either or there. Ooh. Any other moves that or injuries that have caught your eye this week?
No, not injuries. I mean, Alvaro Morata's can't get in shape. You know, it's never good when your manager says you can't get in shape. And Conte's a physio guy. So it's worrisome. I don't think that Morata is going to be on my team now for the first week at least. If he plays and scores, good. I'm just scared off that he
probably the first 2 weeks then, since the second week is Tottenham.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, you're not going to at his price. There's neutral options there.
So he's just become a wait and see for you.
Yeah, and we'll get into that, and when we do the either ors, because I have him in there too. Oh.
We may have foreshadowed literally all of them.
You think that you're the only one who could foreshadow here, sir?
Dude, next up, I'm going to five shadow things. You won't even know what happened.
Get a Mikel Antonio foreheaded it.
Oh, man. I ended up with Antonio in one of my leagues. I was surprised.
Yeah,
he always felt like one of those guys that would end up going way before me. And then, yeah, just how to well, we don't need to get into too much, but
let's foreshadow something else and ruin the whole show for the next half hour.
Okay, so no. all right, well, let's get into a couple of either ors, since apparently all we tease them anyway. We may as well get it out of the way now. So you have a whole lot of defensive midfielders in this game.
Mm-hmm.
You already mentioned two of them. Of those two, who would you rather have?
Oof. I mean, can I downshift and pick another one?
Sure.
Because I would probably punt and completely go to Aurel Romeo at 4.5.
Yeah, you and your weird Romeo love. What is that all about?
Romeo
and Juliet? That might be the title.
Oh, Romeo and Smokey. But yeah, at 4.5, he's going to get minutes. He plays an okay, you know, part of the integral thing that Southampton does offensively. I know they're not in the top 3, 4, 5 of, you know, goal scoring, but he's going to get minutes. He plays tons of minutes there. You know, he played 3,000 minutes last year, you know, for 80 points, 13 clean sheets. He doesn't do much offensively, but he's got one goal the last 2 years in each of the last 2 years. I just have a feeling that he kind of, I'm not saying he breaks out, but I'm not saying that 80 points, I think, is his floor this year. I think, you know, I think 140.
But 80 points isn't good.
I know it's not good. I know it's god awful, but I think that he can add to that total this year. And at 4.5, he's never being utilized for you, just like the other 5.0 defensive midfielders you're talking about. You know, if you want to throw N'Golo Kante in there as well, he's 5.0.
Yeah. Well, we were going to get to that. We were going to get through all of them. So you also have N'Golo Kante, who was mm-hmm. way too heavily owned. Especially in the goal game, which I was just writing about earlier today. And he's like in the top 15 owned, again, because of low price. You also have Victor Wanyama, who ended the season with 4 or 5 goals. Mm-hmm. And then you have Etienne Capoue, who randomly popped up with goals again. And now under Marco Silva, you know, I'm I'm kind of fantasy buying into Watford. I think that first year we had a lot of interest in them, obviously with Ighalo and Deeney, and then there was that like Holobas Janmaat thing for like 3 weeks each of the last two seasons. But yeah, I like them a lot now that it doesn't look like Pereira's going to be shown the door. He's still a creator. Yeah, I'm kind of liking Kapu at the moment. But anyway, of that whole cadre of defensive midfielders, would you still go Romeu or would you just not lean this direction at all?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to throw all defensive midfielders in there, I mean, you got to throw like Granit Xhaka in there. But I know he's a little bit
I'm leaving out intentionally the two that you have the most inexplicable love crush on.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, there's for fantasy for the official game, there's zero value in them. You know, it's like trying to buy into like a Wilfred Ndidi. You're not doing it. You know, that's why I said Oriol Romeu because he's you know half a buck cheaper. So I'm completely punting, but half a buck cheaper.
All right, you got some for me?
Oh, absolutely. Did you watch any of the Liverpool game today against Bayern Munich?
I watched the first half.
Okay, good. So you at least saw some of the game. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced that Liverpool and I know Klopp is kind of enamored with the one of the guys here, and it's Adam Lallana. I think that Adam Lallana is part of this first team for Liverpool. I could be completely wrong. I don't have any other, you know, information to back this up, but I think that Lallana is a player that Klopp likes to play. Mm-hmm. So I'm comparing Lallana, what we saw from Liverpool today and the offensive that he could be part of, or an Everton midfielder that, you know, has a lot of hype surrounding him and a couple tools around him that can make him to a fantasy asset, and it's David Klaassen.
It's Klaassen, and it's not even particularly close for me. I just don't know what to do with this Liverpool midfield right now.
I know. That's the hard part.
And I thought Salah was going to kind of be the odd man out to start the season.
He's not.
But as we talked about on Twitter today, each of us have gone to write pieces about why Salah is overowned, and both times he scored goals that day, which is really frustrating. But the more important thing is that he continues to get the minutes. And so if Pep is committed to having this Firmino, Salah, Mane front three, and then a back three of a whole bunch of people. Because you have Gini Wijnaldum, who I'm very high on this year.
Me too.
Lallana, who you mentioned. There's obviously Coutinho there still. You have Henderson. You have Chan. Like, that is too many players. And I thought the issue was going to be that front line, but that actually seems settled. Now it's who are those players going to be behind there? And so I just do not want to play that game. I'm starting to warm up to Salah. The only issue I have with him is now the ownership. That people bought in too early, but then like happened to be right. And so now there's just no point in me buying in, because if I buy in now, his ownership is high enough that it won't really benefit me too much. But if they're wrong, then I've bought in late on a player that didn't do well. So it's just kind of like, oh, well. But I will say the player that I'm very excited about now is Mane, because he was carrying that little injury triangle. Obviously was an issue last year, missed out at AFCON, came back, got hurt. The only match he was really himself the rest of the year was that match against Ben Davis, which was the most predictable, amazing performance of all time. Like, that whole week, everybody was talking about how Mane was going to spin Davis, and then he did, to the tune of two goals. But like today, getting the goal and the chopped heel down the line as well, he looks very, very good. And I will say about Coutinho, just continue to not actually talk about Lallana, which was your whole point. I'm starting to have concerns about Coutinho, that this attack may literally move too quickly.
Ooh, that's a good point.
That they won't be building through the middle. They'll just be playing it quickly down the wings, and we've seen how devastating that can be. And Firmino, Salah, and Mane at full tilt is going to be faster than anybody to catch up. So all of a sudden, I'm leading away from the Coutinho's in the world and starting to genuinely be interested in that front three. As for Lallana, like I said, I can't commit to that right now, because now there's five players battling for those three spots, and I just don't know how it's going to fall.
Yeah, the thing with Coutinho is an interesting thing, and I hate, you know, translating, you know, soccer to another sport. But you know how
basketball... We do it on the show all
the
time.
I know. But it, for the people listening at home that don't watch the other sports, it gets confusing. But so, you know how, like, you said the Mane and Firmino and Salah, they want to keep it up tempo. But Coutinho is a good talent fantasy wise, and he's kind of a slow down player. He's basically like the Carmelo Anthony of Liverpool.
Interesting. Like, if even if you tried to play up tempo, the ball's still going to be in his hands
it's
too
still,
long?
It's still going to be at his... He's still going to want the ball, and when he's going to be... Those other three guys are going to create enough space for Coutinho to, you know, to do his little cutback. That's
true. He'll get to run into a lot of pockets, mm-hmm. which means we're going to see a lot of those long-range shots, which means every 3 weeks you'll see one on SportsCenter, and the other 2 weeks he'll miss five shots without putting any on target.
Yeah, which is completely fine. So basically, it's Coutinho in a nutshell for his fantasy career that he does good things for three games, and then completely takes a month off, and then does good things for two.
Yeah, I will say he was a little more consistent real life last year. Hopefully, that will translate to fantasy. But yeah, just not super big on him. So throwing it back to you, we always talk about the William Fabregas one, but there's another one at Tottenham, which is the Ollie Ericsson debate. Son, by the way, is a really sneaky play if he ends up getting back fit in time, because his injury has somehow erased him from everyone's mind, which is incredible.
He's forgotten.
Which is incredible, considering he scored 20-plus goals in all competitions last season. But with the Dele Alli Ericsson thing, I do just want to ask you your opinion, but there's an interesting piece of information that some people may not know that it's important to share, which is, first of all, a goal is worth almost twice as much as an assist in this format. Dele Alli will obviously score more goals of the two of them. And two, Dele Alli is suspended for the first three Champions League matches. So if there is a rotation... Mm-hmm. Dele Alli will be the one that's available in the Premier League.
Absolutely.
He, on the other hand, is not taking set pieces, but also Eriksen kind of isn't taking set pieces, considering down the second half of last season, Tottenham played an incredible amount of short corners instead of just whipping it in. So, with all those negatives about Eriksen, I'm going to ask you an unbiased question, and not a leading question at all, and ask you, which one would you rather have?
I'm on Dele Alli this year. Every template team that I've made or every draft team I've made, Ali is one of the first players I've always put in. At 9.5, I love his price. I think last year, 18 and 11 is probably middle of what we can expect this year. I'm expecting 20 and 13, 20 and 14.
Wow. Which would be like an Alexis year.
Yeah, basically. I'm expecting this year to be the Ali game, like the Ali show there. I'm not saying that Eriksen isn't a completely usable, you know, fantasy option there. I'm just liking Dele Alli, and I think that, you know, what we saw last year, 225 points, 18 goals, 11 assists in, you know, just over 3,000 minutes. I think that's bottom of what, you know, middle of what he could be. If he gets that again, I would take it all day for 9.5, because that's basically an 11.0 performance.
Yeah,
you know, it's basically Kevin De Bruyne type stuff that you're getting back. You know, I'm not taking anything away from Eriksen. Eriksen's a phenomenal player, and you know, like you said, there's twice as much for goals as there is assists, and I think that's where Ali is where you're making your money.
Yeah, agree with you there. You have any ones of these left before we take a quick break?
Oh, I got tons.
Let's go.
I got tons. I'm going to change it up and go defensively a little bit here.
Okay. Maybe I'll keep these responses a little shorter. I didn't realize we were already at the 20-minute mark.
No, go ahead, man. Wax poetic about everything. people love to hear your gift of gab and your vernacular expand. So in the last couple Tag drafts, we're going to get into it in a little bit. We'll
foreshadowing
again. I did make a comment that there is one player that you seem to be getting in every draft, and it's because of value. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's Charlie Daniels. So I know we're talking about the official game and not Taga here, but so which Cherries defender in the official game are you looking at here? Charlie Daniels or Nathan Ake?
Or Adam Smith? No, it's Daniels at the moment, just because goals carry more weight. I love Adam Smith. He, you know, when everybody kept talking about how Walker and Trippier were tied for the most assists last year, Adam Smith was just standing there like, what am I, chopped liver to you guys? Also, all former Tottenham right backs. That's not true. Wing backs,
yeah.
Yeah. No, they are all right backs. Yeah. That's actually pretty neat.
Thank you.
Because, Adam Smith obviously came through the Tottenham Academy. But anyway.
Wasn't he with Pocahontas, too?
John Smith, and you know it.
Oh.
Had a great cross on him, though, John Smith.
Yeah. with a tomahawk.
I'm going Charlie Daniels, although Ake is interesting. Sorry, not to disrupt. I would go Daniels. I just thought of one, though. And I thought about it yesterday during the Taga draft, which we'll get to in a little bit. But you know how everybody loved Ake last season? On mm-hmm. loan from Chelsea, went to a decent defense, all of a sudden had a lot of fantasy value?
Mm-hmm.
Why is everybody now thinking about Ake, but nobody thinking about Zuma, which is basically the exact same situation, except to a better defensive team in front of a better goalkeeper?
Yeah, well, you know me, and I love Kurt Zuma, so I can't talk about him enough. I just think that his price at 5.5 kind of narrows him out
yeah.
of the, you know, because at 5.5 you can get a Ryan Bertrand or a Trippier. You're not looking at Zuma as a comparative to Bertrand or Trippier right now.
True. And I suppose Ake was 4.5 to start last year.
Yeah.
Which made him a budget option.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, everybody's enamored. I have Ake currently in my Steve Watch.
Is Ake at 5?
5.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I have Ake currently, but I mean, I love Charlie Daniels just as much as the next guy. I rode his pony for a long, long time last year.
It feels like you're off him a little bit this year.
Yeah, you know what? I just...
You don't think it's repeatable?
I'm waiting to see because, you know, the year before, he was really good. Last year, he kind of was like downtrodden. I want to make sure
that the second half of the season, they just couldn't stop conceding.
Yeah, they sucked. But I don't want it to be, you know, 2 years ago, Christian Fuchs had a good year. Last year, he was down. I don't want Charlie Daniels to follow that same metric, and I'm a little leery of it. It's the same way I don't own Christian Fuchs anywhere yet.
Yeah, just wait and see.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You got a few more?
Oh, I got tons, man. So we mentioned Morata, and I teased it, so now I got to say it. But I'm going with it. The two guys that are the highest, you know, the most talked about transfers into the Premier League, I think it's so Lacazette or Morata. It's an easy thing to talk about right now.
As we mentioned last week, I was leaning Morata, but then those Conte comments scared me. Tottenham that second week scares me. So of the two of them, I'd lean Lacazette right now.
Yeah, I'm leaning zero right now. I'm completely punting Arsenal to start the season. Though I'll look at them, you know, like two or three games into the season. But yeah, I'm off both of them. Morata news is like a stake through my heart right now because I'm fully vetted him on my Taga teams, which we'll talk about soon. but yeah, I don't buy either right now. I'd rather diversify my funds up front to three guys, you know, below two below 10 and one over 11, than have two guys over, you know, over 10.
Yep.
That's all I got, man. Go to break. We'll do it live.
All right. Screw it. We'll do it live. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, we are back from break. We're going to quickly talk about some of the highest owned players in the FPL game right now. And basically just go through and say which ones we think are worth it and which ones work it, and if they're worth it.
Put your thang down, flip it in reverse. Right. And then a whole bunch of nonsense in reverse.
Is that Missy?
Yeah.
Nice. I almost just said RIP, but I think she's definitely still alive. All right. So starting with
goalkeepers. Sorry, Missy Elliott.
Sorry for just, I don't know, assuming that you died. Starting with goalkeepers, we'll just do the top five. You have David De Gea at 28.3, Courtois at 18.1. Foster at 17.2, Elliott as a price dump at 14.2, and Lloris at 12.8. Do you think this is the right order? Who do you think's worth it? Who do you think should work it?
you know, the De Gea and Courtois love, I get it, because, you know, they're one has speculation of being the clean sheet, or from our perspective, me and you, we've both said it out loud that we think United will probably lead the league in clean sheets by year end. So at 5.5, that's a good investment.
Which, by the way, the match signing only further helps.
Yeah. And then Courtois, who had the most last year, or tied for the most, I believe.
Yeah, had the most. Larissa dropped it in that Leicester game.
So, I mean, people are buying into stats from last year. That's why the ownership is there. Plus, they're bigger names on bigger clubs. It makes complete sense. you know, but for my money at 5.5, I don't understand why Hugo Lloris is you know, half as much as De Gea is. He's on a probably just as good a team defensively than as United is, and has the same speculative clean sheet value that De Gea should have. Mm. That's just me. You know, after the top five, I think it gets interesting with goalies. There's like four guys in the 12s percentage wise. Lloris, Hart, which is crazy, at 12.3%. Joe Hart, I don't get it. Pickford at 12.2, and Tom Heaton, last year's darling of the Fantasy Premier League world, 12.0. I think that's the cusp right there for everybody who's being owned. After that, it's everybody else is like a speculative as a second goalie guy. I believe like Begovic, Forster, yeah. Boric, Hennessy.
I think Begovic could be really interesting behind that defense.
I do too. And big shout out to Chuck Booth, who is riding Asmir Begovic's pony all the way to last place somewhere, I'm sure.
Shots fired. So Foster, I understand his high ownership because he's a 4.5, mm-hmm. and he's the best of the 4.5 options, as we know right now. But last season, only keeps six clean sheets. The year before that, only keeps four. Like, we keep assuming that West Brom are this defensive juggernaut, but I think a lot of times people confuse boring with good defense.
Oh, and you want to hear something funnier about West Brom?
Sure.
They've played five preseason games. None against a Premier League opponent or a top flight team in any division internationally. Mm-hmm. And they have one clean sheet.
Yeah, it's weird, man. It's just not been happening lately. So would you rather have Foster at 4.5 with a good 10 first matches, or Fraser Forster at 5.0 with a good first 10 matches?
Ooh, I mean, I'd probably lean Forster because I like Southampton's defensive, how they line up.
Right,
for the first
and I think they get 2+ more clean sheets over that 10-game stretch.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I also like Wayne Hennessy at the same 4.5 price.
Wayne Hennessy is a really interesting one with this defense Hutters, in front of them. I just can't believe that they go into another season with him as their one.
Yeah, with Huddersfield, Liverpool, Swansea, Burnley, Southampton, their first five. You know, that's looking like three clean sheets.
Yeah, Frank de Boer defense, man. Bringing mm-hmm. in Rita Wald to pair with probably Scott Dan. It's mm-hmm. going to be interesting. Oh, also, I don't know if this is common knowledge or not, but Frank de Boer has started training the youth players in a three-at-the-back system, nice. Which would assume that the long-term goal of the senior team is to play three at the back, which, by the way, would make Van Aanholt lethal.
But what if two of them are overweight? Does that mean three in the back, two if they're fat?
Is that a reference?
Yeah, it's from a song.
Which song?
Notorious B.I.G.
Oh! You ready?
Come on, man.
Sorry, I'm a young gun, man.
And scene. moving on to defenders for the most percentageally owned. We still have David Luiz on top at 21.7.
It's followed that 0.5, man.
Yeah, it's followed by Charlie Daniels at 21.3. Angel Ronhel at 20.8 is the 4.0 dump. Kieran Trippier, 20.4%, followed in fifth place by Kyle Walker at 20.2%.
Yep.
Anything out of the ordinary, Kev? I know there's not any big names in there. We're missing out on last year's defensive leading scorer, Alonso. He's just missing that. He's down a little bit from Kyle Walker.
Oh man. Although I know you're pro defenses here. I'm a little bit surprised that Bellerin isn't higher up. It's the correct move to not. Mm-hmm. But I'm impressed that people are showing restraint in that regard. Daniels is obviously the one that sticks out. Honestly, did not know that he was all the way up at 21.3%. That may cause me to shift back to Adam Smith again. But Ron Hell is the obvious choice at 4.0 right now because he, you know, has mm-hmm. been in the starting 11 not too long ago. Also, you know, Kyle Naughton is no tremendous threat in front of him. It'll be interesting to see if a different 4.0 becomes the flavor of the month. Like we've said this whole offseason, the like era of the 4.5 defender is dead. So trying to find anybody of value at 4.5 or under is going to be very, very important for people. So, you know, we'll just have a much better sense of that by like week three or four if anybody else matters around that price point. But this all makes a lot of sense. I mean, Trippier at 5.5, having his price come out a week and a half before Walker leaves was terrific news for everybody.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean,
literally is close to a must own week one as any player in the format.
Oh, yeah. And I could see him being the number one owned defender by the time game kicks off. I mean, he's close. He's only 1.3% behind. So,
yep.
And get it, and on your 4.0 defenders, if anybody's looking for a sneaky guy, take a look at Kevin Long. He started every game for Burnley so far, and he's 4.0. So
the only weird thing there is he's supposed to be a left back.
Yeah.
And they've been playing him centrally, and I really don't know what that's about.
Well, look what they have there. They have Ben Mee and nobody else.
Oh, because they forgot to replace Keane, a player they knew was going to be leaving this summer for like a year and a half.
Tarkowski, and that's it.
Oh, I mean, goodness.
You know, they can't play Loughton there. He's not good enough. They could play Phil Bardsley.
Ooh, nice.
Not. but yeah, so Kevin Long at Burnley, if anybody's looking for a $4 chuck, keep that name in mind, Kevin Long.
Yeah, if memory serves, though, Burnley's first five matches are horrible.
Oh, they're awful. I mean, Chelsea, West Brom, Spurs, Crystal Palace, Liverpool.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. Chelsea, Spurs, Palace, Liverpool, not a fan of. West Brom won't score or defend, so that'll be... Yeah.
That'll and, they be are. An and Burnley look. Is at home, and Burnley does play... They do have a metric where they're better at home.
Yeah, that is very true. Much, much more comfortable at home. Mm-hmm. All right, now to the midfielders. We talked about how great he is this season. Dele Alli, 37.1. Coutinho, who I am way pulling the reins on right now, at 30.4. Zaha at 22.9. At 7.0, which is crazy to me, because last year he was in the 5, like, wasn't he like 5.5 or 6?
5.5.
To start the year. So he gets a 1.5 jump, but everybody's still buying in. De Bruyne, unsurprisingly, 22.7. Pogba, man, again, this is one of those ones people bought in way too early, but now the Modric news makes it better. Mm-hmm. But I would have hated that up until recently. So of those top five, anybody in particular stick out? We don't really need to talk about Ali or Coutinho since we already did.
Yeah,
but I know you've been a big Zaha guy in the past.
Yeah, I like Zaha. I think that Palace could do some. I'm not going to say they're going to fly under the radar here because everybody knows who Wilfred Zaha is and everybody knows who Christian Benteke is. But I think Zaha can build on what we saw last year: 149 points, 7 goals, 11 assists. I'm not really worried about the clean sheets. You know, if you're worrying about clean sheets and rostering Wilfred Zaha, you need to go find a different game. I'm sorry. But yeah, I mean, I think he can extrapolate on those. You know, would it be out of the realm of possibilities that Zaha, to me, resembles, if he can get on and stay, you know, on form enough, he looks like a 10-goal scorer to me. So is 3 goals more than last year? Is that such a hurdle that I don't think he can get to? No, I think he could do it. I mean, there's not many more minutes he could squeak out. He did have, you know, just over 3,000 minutes. So I mean, there's not much more minute wise you could hope for. I just think that he needs the players around him to play better. And I'm not saying Benteke can play better, but I'm saying that the players through the midfield punch in, and you know, Mila Jolovic or whatever the hell his name is, they could play, you know, help augment Wilfred Zaha. Yeah. And the funny thing about Pogba is since the Modric signing, he's gone up like 0.8% ownership, which has only been, you know, yesterday. since like, you know, 12 hours ago, basically.
I do want to touch on De Bruyne for a second, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when they first signed Bernardo Silva, everybody was really worried about what was going to happen in this attack. And it seems like nobody's really worried about that anymore. I always thought De Bruyne was always going to have a place. It was just whether or not he'd get pushed out to the right. But now Sterling's having a good preseason. A, are you confident that De Bruyne will be a 30-plus week starter? And two, are you concerned at all that he may be pushed around to areas where he may be a little less effective?
I think he's a 30-game starter. I think the one thing about Kevin De Bruyne is no matter where he plays, he's going to be an effective player. I think that he could play both sides of the pitch. He could play up the middle. It doesn't matter. He could play wherever, you know. He's a phenomenal talent. And fantasy-wise, you probably can't get any better at the 10.0 price tag, except if your name's Dele Alli at 9.5. But, yeah, I mean, just look at the production that De Bruyne had last year. 6 goals, 21 assists. You're basically getting, you know, Christian Eriksen-type production. I know he's more expensive, but City's going to score more goals, I believe, than Spurs. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not worried about De Bruyne. You know, if he plays 30 games at 10.0, at the end of the season, he's going to be an 11-something player.
Yeah. Yep. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I agree.
All right. So for forwards, you have new boy Romelu Lukaku at Manchester United at almost 50% owned.
Yeah, well, we called it on the first podcast of the year that he was going to be the highest owned player.
We did. Then you have Harry Kane at 35.0. Rooney, it's his low 7.5.
Rooney! George Pearson!
Price down at 19.2. Lacazette at 17.9. And as you mentioned, Chicharito already all the way up to 17% owned. The one that sticks out to me here is Harry Kane, because I've seen people on both sides of this argument already saying that it's ridiculous that Kane isn't the most owned forward, and people saying Kane's really garbage to start the season. So just for a little balance, it is worth noting that Harry Kane has never scored before match week 4. Ron made a really funny joke off air that maybe he did in 6th grade. In the Premier League, he has never done it. Now, to be fair, now that we've thrown out that bombastic stat that everybody is using, he was not a starter in 2014-15. It took the combined failings of Roberto Soldado and Emmanuel Adebayor to push him into the team, and Kane had already been scoring in Europa League. Yeah. So, the big question here is, will this happen again? Two interesting pieces of information. First of all, this is the first time he's had a proper offseason and preseason. All the other years he was doing England stuff. He was in the U-20s and the U-21s, then the Euros. Mm-hmm. So now he's finally getting that break. And two, he is healthy coming out of those offseasons and preseasons. So I'm not saying that he will reverse that trend, but if he does, there will at least be a correlation, if not a causation, as to why. Mm-hmm. So where do you land on the Kane issue? Are you worried because of his failings to start the season in the past, or do you think that now that he's actually had some time to A, rest, and B, train, that he may be able to hit the ground running when they face Newcastle to start the season?
Well, I think it plays into your favor kind of two ways here. I think that there's the people that are scared off by his, you know, not scoring in the first 4 matches type scenario. And then there's the people who are like, screw that, I'm gonna roll with it and see if he does do it. And if he doesn't, you were the right person for not rostering him in the first place, and those people already rostered him and wasted $12.5 million of their $100 million. So it's kind of like an okay thing for either way. But the interesting thing is I'm not currently rostering Harry Kane. Harry Kane is, when people are ready to wild card in, say, week 3 through 7, whenever they start bringing him in, he's going to be brought in at a phenomenal rate, because I guarantee he's going to probably score in week 3. That's when people are going to start looking at Harry Kane and be like, okay, he's playing Burnley at home. It's after the Chelsea match. I think Newcastle,
interesting note. We don't actually know where that match is going to be played yet.
So, because Wembley is what? Not ready?
I think they're doing like a rugby thing. Oh, no. Wait, false alarm. They moved it to the Sunday to make it
okay. Okay, so this is how I break down the Spurs schedule. And Kevin is the Spurs aficionado. He's one of the smartest Spurs guys I've ever listened to in my life. But listen, Newcastle, their first game promoted back to the Premier. They're at home for their first game of the season. Newcastle is going to park the striped bus so bad in that game, it's not even going to be funny, because they're going to try to come out of that game with at least 1 point. Chelsea at home, you're not going to risk Harry Kane in there. I mean, if you're in a DFS format or you're running your roster, you're nowhere even going close to Harry Kane playing Chelsea. So that leads you to Burnley at home, week 3. I mean, that's the game for me where if you're looking to unleash the Harry Kane dragon, the mother of dragons, Kevin DeVries, Harry Kane is going to be unleashed in week 3. And then after that, he's got Everton, Swansea, West Ham, Huddersfield, Bournemouth. I'm buying for all that. So week 3 is when I'm personally looking at Harry Kane. I don't care if he's never scored ever in the first month since he was like a toddler. I don't care. That is just happenstance and dumb luck. And like Kevin said, some guy named Roberto Soldado and Emmanuel Adebayor actually existed 3 years ago.
Yep.
So that was the reason. And then Harry Kane started doing stuff in Europa, and everybody was like, huh, this kid knows what the hell he's doing.
Let's try that one.
So happenstance, that was a fluke. And then the last 2 years, listen, everybody gets off the slow starts. Look at the things that happen in baseball. People play better in the second half, let alone just the first 4 games.
Yeah.
So I mean, people can chill a little bit saying that he's on the first month, but it doesn't bother me at all, because if you're going to roster him and you believe that he's going to score, cool. If you're not going to roster him because you think he's not going to score, cool too, because I'm not going that route anyway to week 3.
Yeah. Speaking of second halves, it's just worth noting for people, after Valentine's Day,
Ooh.
Tottenham will play 3 top 10 defenses from last season for the rest of the season. That's 10 matches, and they're only going to face 3 top 10 defenses from last year. So, you know, you saw what he did down the stretch this past season.
Yeah.
With those 7 goals in the last 2 matches. I'm just saying, if Tottenham need to make up ground, and or your fantasy team needs to make up ground, look towards that end of the season. Tottenham do have 2 really rough stretches in October, Liverpool, United, Arsenal, 3 out of 4. And in January, they have Everton, Southampton, United, Liverpool, Arsenal consecutively, which is not a fun time. And, you know, by then we'll know whether or not Ali and Eriksen and Kane are, like, opponent-proof. Mm-hmm. But that last 10 matches is going to be really interesting.
If you're looking that far ahead, you might as well start looking at, because if they advance out of the group stages of the Champions League, that's when it starts getting hectic right there, the end of February, beginning of March.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind, too. So, I mean, I know Kevin Mick brings up a good point. After Valentine's Day, you're going to be wanting sending all your chocolates to the Spurs, but that stretch of games right there, the only game that sticks out, there's 2 games that stick out. It's the Chelsea and Man City games, and everything else is like a cruise fest.
Yep. Yeah, the only other top 10 defense from last year is West Brom.
Yeah.
Right, and we all know that they always concede exactly 1 goal in the 80th minute or later.
Mm-hmm. We know it for a fact. It's fact. Yep.
All right, it is known. All right, now we will get to the talk of stuff that we said we would. This is not a sponsored episode, but we do have 2 leagues that we're both in right now. One is the Experts League that we've done every year that Toga has existed. The other is we decided to do a Listener League, and we're actually going to take part in it as well. The draft for that was on Monday. We'll start with the Expert League, though. Just quickly, give me a couple picks that you made that you were really proud of, maybe a couple that you clicked and you're like, ugh, I don't know if I love that guy so much.
Well, you know, it's when you're in a draft with your peers, it's tough. It's honestly tough. Because
it ruins everything.
It does, because there's no sleeper appeal. Everybody jumps on guys 2 or 3 rounds early. But when you're someone as savvy and draft-oriented as me, basically my best pick was pick 1 through 16. I think I've established – I won the league on draft day. No, I'm kidding.
In the words of Kendrick.
Yeah. Listen, I had a couple – I picked 11th over – 11th?
Yeah,
11th. Mm-hmm. So I went Morata with the first pick, which now I'm regretting because he's a fat tub and can't get in shape. I'm calling him fat. And then I backed it up with Aguero. I'm still on the – you need forwards to win in Taga, period, end of statement. So I have Aguero and Morata firmly entrenched there. My midfield, I'm not completely in love with. There's a lot of – there's some question marks there. I got Ander Herrera. I got Gini Wijnaldum, Cesc Fabregas. Some rotation worries there. The only one I'm not worried about is Andres Townsend. Andres Townsend in Taga is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent.
All those crosses, though.
Yeah. Love them. I love everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm a little leery about my midfield, but I do have Xhaka on the bench, so that is good. And I do have, by surprise, Oriol Romeu.
And no way.
So moving on to defense, defense in expert leagues is kind of a completely wait and wait and then wait and then just take the best 4 whenever it's your turn to draft a defender.
I think I took the second overall defender, because Alonso went way earlier than I thought.
Yeah, he went in the second or third round.
Yeah, and then I
went really early.
In like the 5th, yeah. I think.
But I tried to get a staple from at least 3 of the top 5 or 6 defensive teams I think will be in for this year. Mm-hmm. So I got Gary Cahill, I got Eric Bailly, I got Vincent Kompany, if he can stay healthy, and then I took a gamble on Winston Reid. Winston Reid has surprisingly good stats for a West Ham defense that wasn't awesome last year, but he does well enough that in Taga's scoring format that he can, you know, he still garnered 245 points, which is, you know, pretty good. It's 100 less than, or 90 less than Gary Cahill, who was a phenomenal defender last year. Rounding out my team, you know, like I said, I have Romeu, I have Xhaka as my midfielders. I didn't draft a backup defender because you don't need one. I have 4. That's all you need. So I basically just load up on forwards. I have Sam Vokes. I like Sam Vokes this year. I like all the news surrounding Andre Gray if he's going to leave. I like that kind of stuff. I took Glenn Murray from Brighton. I think, you know, I don't think age is a thing here. I think he's still going to get goals. He's not going to be awesome, but forwards are, you know, hard to come by, and you want to get in volume here. You want to be like the Costco of Taga fantasy forwards. You want to buy in bulk. So, and then I gambled with my second to last pick, and I put Mama Bjerem Doof, who is a friend of the show, and he loves us. He sends us chocolates.
Right winger and striker
from Senegal. I don't even know where he's from, but anyway, yeah. So that's my team. No picks really stand out. Like I said, I was a little more nervous about, you know, my midfield, and I love Wijnaldum, and I'm a little leery about Cesc, and I think I took him, you know, right where they should have been taken normally, but I feel like I got suckered into taking him because everybody in this is an expert and they know what they're doing. But when I go undefeated and I rack up the most points ever, we'll see.
Yeah, I had a interesting experience in this experts draft because I fully planned on going forward, and then Ali slipped to me at 7.
Yeah.
Both as a Spurs fan and somebody that thinks he's going to have a terrific year, was not willing to pass up on him to take who I was going to take early, which was going to be Aguero. So I take Ali, it wraps back around, and I'm staring at two players on my second pick. And the two players still on the board are Ozil and Jesus.
Oof.
And so I'm having like a come to God moment between, do I think that Ozil bounces back, or do I think Jesus is an actual, like you were talking about De Bruyne, a 30-plus week starter for City. And then Ozil got taken. And so I already started trying to adjust my strategy to what if I take midfielders the first two rounds. Like, who do I trust later to actually mm-hmm. carry the line? But I end up getting Jesus. And I'm going to be honest, there was more hype for him in the expert circle than I expected. I'm not that excited about him, to be honest. The upside is obviously indisputable. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of concerns about Aguero sticking around, which he should have, but again, I don't know how they're going to get all those players in there. But anyway, so that was the first couple rounds. I wrapped that around with Mkhitaryan had been targeting Zaha and Townsend. Did you take Townsend ahead of me?
I did. Yeah, I took Townsend right ahead of
me. And so obviously Mkhitaryan also upside. And so the first three picks, I already started feeling gambly. Like if Ali regresses, if Jesus doesn't get playing time, if Mkhitaryan doesn't get starts, I could be in dangerous climbing uphill water territories. And I think that really set my draft for the rest of it, because then I basically just took reliable people from then on out.
Yeah.
Went with Llorente, went with Chadli, brought in Juan Mata, who played 8 of the last 10 matches last season. So that kind of backs up the Mkhitaryan thing, because you got to assume one of them is going to be playing. So had the backup there. Like I said, took Trippier early, also got Cedric Suarez, got Victor Moses. So like three of the five best crossing wingbacks in the Premier League there. Bring in Charlie Daniels, Scott Dan, then the midfielders, Etienne Capoue and Yaya Toure, obviously. Both not crazy upside, but pretty stable in what they do. The last two rounds were my gambles with Roberto Pereira and Yaya Toure. But I always think it's interesting to break down the mentality behind what happened. So I started with gambles, then kind of overcorrected towards stability.
Yeah,
and the problem with that is you could end up with too many usable players but not enough good players, and so that's the concern that I have going in, although I fully trust myself throughout the season to pick people up well and to stay relevant. But I did not come away from this draft with the unbridled confidence of, say, a Rob Langevin.
Well, I mean, it's good to have confidence, but then when you lose, you got to be able to just shut up and walk away.
Did anybody else's team stick out to you here before we move on to our fan draft?
I mean, like I said, this was an expert draft, so I mean, everybody knows what they're doing or had a kind of, you know, a plan. You know, everybody made good picks. I'm not going to single out one person. It's preseason. You know, everybody's team looks like a winner on paper right now.
Yeah. All right, well, we will come back to that later. Then, much to our delight, we pretty quickly filled a 10-team league of listeners.
12.
Well, 10 because we are also involved.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but it was really fun getting to do that with a group of fans. Did you see any distinct differences between the two leagues? Because I also noticed that a lot of those kind of championship blue chip guys also went fairly early in this draft. Like the fans that were playing seemed to know their stuff, probably because they listened to the show and were pretty great.
They definitely were paying attention, and I'm gonna chalk it up to them listening to us and and knowing what we're talking about. Surprises? No surprises. I think defensive players went earlier in this draft, which is not a surprise because I don't think people always understand the Taga scoring, where you can just basically fill in on defense and not really take a rake over the coals. Goalies didn't go very early. Saying it should be always that way. I think one or two went a little early, but that's normal. Somebody falls on that grenade and just
is sorting by average draft position.
Yeah, absolutely. Or else. Absolutely. I like this draft better because I think in the expert draft that we just talked about, all the guys that I thought I could get in rounds 4, 5, 6 were gone, way gone, a round earlier. In this draft, they were all there. And then I was just poaching on people's mistakes for skipping over people.
Yeah, I continuing with the mentality talk, overcompensated back the other way and took a lot of risks in this one. I think I mentioned on the show, it may have been in the pre-chat, but I was very surprised that I took Mikhail Antonio. Was sitting there all ready to take Lanzini, then somebody had taken the wrong player, so we undid a few picks, and the person that was right before me changed their pick, I think it was the person right before me, to Lanzini, who I was about to take. It was like, oh. But Antonio was still there, and if he stays fit, I think Antonio is the better option in that same goals or more than assists kind of mold. I'm going to be honest, I think my Experts League team is actually better, drafted in a very similar spot. Rob and I were both one pick earlier, I think, in this one. I was 6 instead of 7, you were 10 instead of 11. But Ali went before me, so I started with Erickson wrapped around with Benteke and Sterling, but see, now it's already more gambling. Is Sterling going to get the minutes? I don't know. Then I go Wayne Rooney instead of Davy Klaassen, which I talked to Rob about on the phone earlier today. I don't know why. Klaassen was next in my rankings. And just in the moment, I don't know, flubbed it. Went Rooney. And then you took Klaassen like 4 picks later. I was like, oh, what did I do? And I'll be honest, I don't think I knew that Raheem Sterling was listed as a forward, because in my ranks they're for everything that I do. So he was listed as forward / midfield in my ranks. If I had known that Sterling had filled that forward slot, I probably would have clicked out of that weird mentality. But ended up with Rooney. Here's the familiar faces. Chadli Mata-Kapu. I don't know why everybody's sleeping on all of them, but I am not. In defense, my defense is worse in the fan league than in the experts league. Stuck with Daniels, got Harry Maguire, Kurt Zuma, still got Danny Rose and Victor Moses. But I waited a lot longer for defenders in this one.
I did too.
Antonio, and then my two gambles in this league, Gundogan and Lamella.
Yeah. Yeah, my team ended up, Gomis in goal, Vertonghen, Winston Reid again, Nathan Ake, Martin Olsen on defense.
I liked that Olsen pick at the time. I don't know why everybody's sleeping on him.
It was really late, too. I got him. I think he was my last defender I drafted. I got Andres Townsend again. I just like where he's falling in drafts, and he just falls right to me. I got Leroy Sané, Wilfred Ndidi, and Davy Klaassen through the midfield. Forwards, I have Roberto Firmino and Morata. And on the bench, I have Granit Xhaka. How do you actually say the Brighton guy? Pascal Grosch? Is it Grosch?
Oh, it's Gross.
Gross. Like ew, Kevin is gross.
Yeah, it's just a double S. Yeah.
Pascal Gross.
It's called an S, that, in case you wanted to know that. The German B looking, that's a double S.
I knew that, but I was seeing if you knew it, okay? the one guy who weirdly fell in this draft, Troy Deeney. I got him really late.
And somebody accidentally took him and then unpicked him. I was like, no, that would have actually been a really good pick.
Yeah, so my strategy here was not much different. I don't draft another defender. I grab two decent midfielders that'll accumulate points. Gross is going to accumulate minutes for Brighton. Xhaka is nailed on, I think, at Arsenal. And then I just loaded up on the last tier of strikers. I have Deeney, Sam Vokes again, and then Tammy Abraham to go along with Firmino and Morata. I think that's plenty, in a Taga format. I'll probably end up dropping one and not really caring, because I'll just move on for a position of need due to injury or attrition.
Yeah. Did you know that Tammy Abraham had many sons?
That was my team name, and it got changed.
Tammy Abraham. What?
That was my team name, and it got changed. I changed it to that because everybody had a funny team name.
Yeah.
And I put that Tammy Abraham had 7 sons, and it didn't work.
Oh, really?
Hold on. Interesting. Right. Changing right now.
All right, well, we're rapidly approaching the hour mark, so we're going to get out of here. But we gave you a lot of official game. We gave you a lot of Taga. We'll keep you apprised of both the experts and the fan leagues throughout the season. Maybe even try to get some of those fan guys on throughout the year. But in the interim, Rob, tell the folks where they can get at you.
You can find me on Twitter at FPL_MNOP. Yes, it's an alphabet thing. And you can find my writings and stylings on Razzball.com.
Yeah, and I am your host, Kevin DeVries, also the host of the EPL Roundtable, which is all Premier League news. I am at Kevroff on Twitter. I'm also the fantasy writer over at Goal.com. We're going to have at least one piece a day from now to the start of the season, maybe more. Thinking about doing a little format change just to get as much information out to you as possible. So a little less in depth probably, but a lot more just names being thrown out you to remind you of players and ownership and prices and everything like that. So if you're interested in that, go over there. Yeah, just stay tuned. The championship show is back on our channel. We're hoping to get back into the DFS game next week. We definitely will for Fantrax Radio. Whether or not we do it with VIP Bet is still up in the air. We're perfectly willing, just waiting to get the green light on that. But we will obviously keep you apprised again at FPL_MNOP. And I am at Kevroff. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Peace.